PGA Nation, we are back, and we are back in a big way. The second major PGA Championship, heading to Kentucky, Valhalla Country Club. It's going to be a fun golf tournament. Full field, which we haven't seen for a while, so we got to dust off our old models, because there are 156 golfers in this field. There will be a cut, which honestly, now it's safe to say it's not what we're used to in the more recent tournaments. And it's as full of field as we've seen. Not only is it PGA and LIV golfers, they're letting people in from LIV that aren't even just the guys that qualify, which is good for golf. That's what we want. That's what we need. The best golfers in the world in one tournament. So we have our work cut out for us this week, but this is what we play for. This is a super exciting week. I can't wait to break it down with you. Spence, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, Joel. I see Zach in the chat right now talking about the time move. And I don't know if any of us on this show know who actually took down the draft last week. If it wasn't the audience, it was probably David. The audience has been on fire for what feels like 3 months now. Whether that was a first or second place finish last week, it's been one top-notch move after the next. So I don't know. I mean, maybe Zach's right. This time shift, not having as many people in here, if that's what ends up happening. All I know is that I need to turn something around right now.
Well, I was thinking about changing the audience name to Frankenstein, because apparently we've created a monster. And the audience's ability to create dominant lineups. David, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I mean, Joel, do you want to explain to everyone in team audience why we're at the earliest start time today? I don't have a clue. I don't know if Spence does, but maybe you can explain it.
I'd be happy to. So there's a few reasons. David is on vacation, so I didn't want him to sleep in too late. I wanted to make sure he got up extra early. We got the recording showing. So that's the main reason. I don't think it has anything to do with the Knick game tonight at 8 o'clock. I wouldn't imagine there's any reason why we would move the show around that Knick game.
Yeah, I mean, it might be that. But yeah, I appreciate the early wake-up call. I'm here in Manila, Philippines, actually, at the moment. So it's extra early for me, much more than usual. But look, Joel, I'll forgive you. I had a radio interview at 6 a.m. anyway, so I can stay up for the 7 a.m. PGA Draftcast and join all you lovely folk for another major championship. So as you said, super exciting to see a really strong field, see a few of the LIV guys get invites that we haven't seen recently, although surprising Louis Oosthuizen and turned down that invite because he's moving house this week. You know, of all the reasons to not play in a major championship, that has to be the most interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, listen, Louis is not the best golfer, but he's good enough where he's made a lot of money. Like, Don't people who are that rich just pay someone to move their house? Like, what is he doing? He's not lifting up anything. He's just paying somebody else to do it. So he should go to the PGA Championship and earn that paycheck so he can be basically a free move. But he made his choice.
Yeah, I mean, I have it on good authority that he's booked a U-Haul and, you know, he's got the U-Haul coming and he's packing boxes and moving them in himself. So, you know, good for him.
Good for him is right. Hey, if you're new tonight and joining us for the first time, we're going to give you a course breakdown. Spencer's going to tell you what to look for at Valhalla this week. This will be really helpful when picking golfers. But we're also going to draft teams. And if you are new or the time is new and you're a little confused what's going on, yes, we usually record at 9 p.m. tonight. It's at 7. If you watch the show on YouTube, you can participate in the draft. So you can get in the chat. You can put in picks. The team audience drafts their own team, so you can get involved. So if you're looking at how to do that, how do you chat and get comments, log into YouTube, find the draft cast, participate yourself, get involved in the chat, draft a team. Zach Jeffers, who we just commented, he's in the chat now. He typically helps lead the team audience and confirms your pick, so it won't be hard for you to catch up and follow along. Before we dive in, Spence, enlighten us. What are you looking for this week in your golfers at Valhalla Golf Club?
Yeah, Valhalla is going to be an extremely lengthy track on paper. It measures 7,609 yards. you get this thick rough in the Zoysia grass fairways that I talked about this a little bit in my Roto Baller article yesterday. It's like this fire and ice combination since the rough impedes rollout on this tricky Nicholas design. However, the firm and fast conditions of the fairways create this fiery nature that will and can very quickly run your balls into the numerous sand traps located throughout the property. I decided in my model to look at both of those two factors. I wanted to look at proximity totals when I combine that together. That doesn't necessarily mean that these fairways will be impossible to hit, at least as much so as we've gotten during some iterations of this tournament. I've looked at this course and there's a lot of news that has come out about it where you have this three-tiered rough. And if you get into the third tier of it, it gets very thick all of a sudden. I think the questions that people have right now is that just so wayward that it's taking anything but the most wayward drives out of play? I do tend to think that when you look at this tournament from top to bottom, it's probably going to be easier than most of these PGA championships that we get. There's wet conditions right now with all the rains that's hit the Kentucky area. I do think at its core, though, all PGA championship designs take on a very similar outlook. You're always going to need this total driving that's geared towards distance. Long iron play ends up playing that secondary metric that comes into the mix. I did weigh putting probably more than most people because that par-saving quality is going to be needed at the back end of the equation there when you do miss a green in regulation. But we heard Justin Thomas talk about this today, and we've even seen it both of the two times that we've essentially gotten a PGA championship here. It's hard to separate yourself from the pack, and I think it's probably even more difficult this year with a lot of the ways that we're looking at it because you get this thick rough around the surface. To me, anytime that you have extremely thick rough, that takes away some of the high-end skills that you're looking for. Think of Augusta National and think of how that ends up forming the around the green prowess and everything that's needed. It's almost this artistic mastery that comes into play where here it becomes more of this chop it out, make your putt, move forward there. I do think that the course is very basic in what the expectation is with it. I don't think it's as much distance as some people are going to look at when you see the 7,609 yard venue. Nicholas always has some strategic nature to his properties, but it kind of keeps going back to what I said just a second ago. It is very challenging at this course to separate yourself. And for a DFS perspective, it opens up the equations a little bit of what we want to be looking for and how we're going to build our model and how we can separate from the pack from there.
I love it. I love it. And that is very important, especially this week with a full field, 156 golfers to choose from. It's important that you have a profile of golfer to target to get your edge to make sure you have a chance at competing in this field. I will add the caveat to that. That doesn't mean, right, like as Spencer said, this is a very long golf course. That doesn't mean you can only play the long drivers. Right? There are going to be some guys who aren't that long that end up somewhere in the top 10 or 20 in the leaderboard. So, you know, guys who are playing good golf, maybe not the longest drivers or what have you, can still compete in a tournament like this. But listen that back if you need to. Understanding the type and profile of golfer that can success at a course like this will be huge to finding success in DFS this week. Now on DraftKings and on other sites, you know, because it's a major, you have the best tournament. So you can go after the million maker with 140,000, you know, entries. You can go after some of the high stakes tournaments. However you like to play DFS, you certainly will have those options this week. But for tonight, it's a snake draft. So we'll pull the draft board up now. David had an excellent draft last week. He drafted Rory McIlroy, the winner. So he picked the order tonight, and the order is going to go Spencer, me, David, the audience. You will be going fourth. Like I said, it works snake style. So audience, you will get two in a row, and then it will come back. You do need to draft a team within your DraftKings salary. So you can't just take all the best players. You need to make sure each player you take, you can afford, and you can draft a team that will fit a DraftKings salary. Without further ado, with the first pick, Spence, you're on the clock.
I made this joke to David before we started, and me having the number one pick is never advantageous because I always alter my strategy at the very beginning, and I usually jump towards the top of the board, and I find myself in this position later on when naturally as this draft ends up happening. It falls apart and I end up having the scramble. And I'm going to take a different approach this week than I normally would. There, and this isn't necessarily the number one golfer. I am going to, shockingly, Joel, leave you somebody at the number two pick here. I think I want to play this in a safety way. And there's a lot of value at the top that I still like. I'm okay getting the majority of these names that we want to talk about. When I look at the $9,000 and up section, and we'll just look at the $9,000 section in general right now, there are essentially two golfers in my model in the 9,000s that would be a value based off of where my model has them projected when you compare it to what their actual price tag is. One of them is arguably going to be one of the most popular players on the list this week. And I'm sure everybody could deduce what that name is going to be. And we can have those conversations later of whether that's good, bad play in between, whatever that ends up being. I'm going to go for a little bit flatter of a start here. I'm going to let you guys make the decisions at the top. And then I'm going to try to figure out how to work my way, weave in and out of this. I'm going to take Joaquin Niemann at 9,400. I have this take here to where, and we could have this conversation about a lot of LIV golfers. It's not just him in this particular outlook of what I'm viewing here. But think of Niemann when we got to the Masters, and he was one of the most popular bets on the board. He got bet down originally when people didn't know he was in the field, all the way down into this. I mean, there were some books that had him in the low 20s at the Masters at some point. And I think this overcorrection has occurred in the eyes of many here. You're not necessarily getting a cheaper price tag on DraftKings. That has remained flat from what we had at the Masters. But this lack of people that are wanting to go back to this play here, whether that's an outright ticket or it's a DFS price that we're or a DFS ownership that we're talking about here, I see about 12% right now. I think he's good leverage at that price. I think his upside is one of the better values that we can get in this board. And Niemann was inside of the top 10 of my model for both weighted scoring and an additional other categories that I ran. I really like Niemann this week as a buyback opportunity. And as I said, this wouldn't necessarily be the number one player if we were having a draft of let's rank the players who are most likely to win. But with there only being one other player in the 9,000s, that's value. And I only have two players in the 8,000s that were value. I'm going to go here with Niemann at 9,400.
I'm surprised that you're first. Like, I like Niemann this week, but I was not expecting him to be the first pick in the draft. I'll go to you, David. Are you playing Joaquin Niemann this week?
I'm absolutely devastated. I've been biting my tongue throughout this whole thing while Spencer's been going on his Niemann rant, because I set the draft order today, having been victorious last week, we think. And I figured that I'll give Spence and Joel the first two picks because they'll get Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, somebody at the top. And I'll like sit here in third spot quite nicely and take Joaquin Niemann with my first pick. And Spence has just gone and torn up the playbook, taken Niemann with his first pick, absolutely ruined the rest of this draft for me before I've even picked a player. So thanks to you, Spencer, from Manila to Las Vegas, still destroying lineups for me.
There you have it. The Joaquin Niemann first pick endorsed off the board. All right. Well, it's no surprise who I'm taking with the second pick. I mean, I'm going for the Grand Slam. I'm going to get the Grand Slam, I hope, in the DraftCast, as well as Scheffler getting it in real life this year. I don't think having a baby is going to slow him down. Listen, the way he's been playing like an absolute machine since March, he's won every tournament he's played but one, and in that tournament he went to extra holes and got second. So this is the best golfer in the world by a wide margin. In a four-man tournament, any four-man tournament, obviously the one we're doing now, to me, it's a great play every single time. The only argument I would even make against Scheffler is I can see a world where Scheffler could win this tournament and he could still not be in the winning lineup because of how expensive he is. So there's a world where there's a balanced build of six guys in the top 10 that could just beat a Scheffler lineup because of what you can afford. It's a matter of, you know, being able to nail some of the value plays that go along with them to make it work. But in terms of upside, it's hard to imagine anything worse than at very, very, very worst case a top 10 and a Scottie Scheffler this week. So you don't need to tell me to tell you that Scottie Scheffler is good in golf. We all, if you're watching this show, you know that by now. So any additional feedback or comments on Scheffler? We'll start with you, Spence.
I think the only thing I would say to this, and I agree, the having a kid is not a reason of any kind why I wouldn't play him. I think it comes down to contest selection at the end of the day. Yeah. I mean, that's going to be the ultimate. If we're looking here as a, if this was nothing more and all we're trying to do on the show is, can we beat the other three people? I'm putting Scottie Scheffler into my lineup and I'm moving forward with it. I think there's discussions to be had in different sort of contests of which route you want to go. But look, he's the number one player in the world. He's the most dominant name right now. I'm not going to come on a show and say that anything bad about Scottie Scheffler. Like, he's the number one player in my model by about double the points of the way that I graded of anybody else.
There you have it. How about you, David? Any reason to maybe not play Scottie Scheffler this week?
It's going to be really interesting to see the ownership on Scheffler, right? Like, I wonder if people will read too much into the baby narrative, as you kind of alluded to. I mean, look, he should really be kind of 25-30% owned. We know how he's been playing. And for me, the birth of the child, of his their firstborn, kind of came at the perfect time. Like, it happened on a Monday. Like, he can still get to Valhalla, he can still do his practice rounds, he can still see the course, you know, and it wasn't like his preparation for this tournament was disrupted as a result of the baby coming. So that for me, like, I think if we do see a swing in ownership, I'm really interested to see where his percentage ends up, because if that swing in the ownership goes too far the other way because of the baby and people like, oh, he's getting bad sleep and, you know, his mind's not on this, you know, he's all twinkly eyed with the birth of his baby. You know, I think that he could be interesting if he goes less than 30%.
There you have it. I love it. I love it. Good strategy for this week. David, with your first pick, you are on the clock.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been scrambling for a little bit here because Spencer's ruined my whole plan of how this draft build would go from the beginning. And it's really, I mean, it seems disingenuous to say that your draft is ruined when you haven't even picked a player, but it does in terms of...
Welcome to my life, David.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, look, this is karma for all the times I've stolen from Spence. It does happen. And, you know, this is what happens when you get, you know, people who are following the world of golf and getting into the data, that people like Spence and I are going to end up on the same guys, you know, and that's just part of the nature of it. I really like the Neiman play. But what it does kind of ruin is just the structure that you're going to approach this with. You know, it ruins how the rest of that bill goes in terms of where the prices come. So guaranteed now that Joaquin Neiman misses the cut, Spence has got the jinx on him because of this. So that is guaranteed. So I'll give him that. So look, I'm going to go take someone who's going to be pretty chalky at the top of the board, but he's just won two golf tournaments. He's a defending champion here, really. Won the last tournament here in 2014. He's playing great golf. I'll take Rory McIlroy. It does come with some trepidation. Look, I don't think the fact that whilst Scottie Scheffler was giving birth on Monday, Rory was filing divorce papers on Monday morning, and the whole PGA Tour board, like, he's been on and then off and then back on again, then off again, is a distraction for him. And, you know, that does give me some concern. But look, maybe Rory just comes out and he's just real angry and just ends up winning the tournament by five strokes. I think in terms of, like, construction of the golf course, there could be probably no better spot in the world than Valhalla for Rory McIlroy. The driving distance is obviously a real asset. He doesn't get too wayward off the tee. His long irons are going to be really, really key. And I do think it's going to play a lot like Quail Hollow, where Rory's just gone and won his fourth tournament there. So very, very promising, I think, in terms of those regards. And it's just going to come down to, can he keep those demons quiet between his ears coming down the stretch on Sunday?
There you have it. Is Rory back? Listen, he looked great last week. Will that carry over to this week? I like the pick. Rory's obviously one of the best talents in the world, definitely in this field, and it does seem like a good course fit. So I will endorse it. Before I get feedback from you, Spencer, audience, you are on the clock. It looks like there are picks in. We appreciate it. We'll lock those in a minute. You have two, though, so we need to lock two picks. Spence, would love your feedback on Rory.
I mean, I double down on everything that David just said, and the one thing I'll add to it is add a wet courts to the mix here. Rory dominates wet and long golf courses more than any golfer in the entire world. So, you know, we could have a discussion of what his actual win equity is in a major championship when he hasn't won one in 10 years. But the last time he's won one was at this course. So, you know, maybe Rory's rolling right now. Like, I don't know what this is going to end up being. I mean, thankfully we're in a spot here where like it's 7.5, 8 to 1 at most of these shops. And I don't have to worry about punching the ticket there, cause I seem to get caught in this Rory windstorm specifically at Augusta more than most people do with it. But there's probably not a course out there that is more ideally set up for a golfer to win a major championship. Like, Rory's going to get a handful of more opportunities throughout the rest of his career. I don't know if he's going to get one that's better than this.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Fully endorsed.
The other thing I'll add, which I didn't mention, is he's $1,200 cheaper than Scheffler. And I think the disparity in that price compared to, say, the betting odds, where Scheffler's like 4-1 to win the tournament and Rory's 7-1, like, they're pretty close when it comes to betting markets. But the price difference is, like, that $1,200 will come in useful for me later in the draft.
There you have it. I am getting early confusion on the audience's two picks. So we're going to need someone to step in because I got locks on Hatton, Brooks, and Bryson. So we can only have two. We need clarification who the two are of those three. As Zach has been the audience's captain, Zach Jeffers, over the course of this season, I will leave it to Zach to solidify the lock on the two picks for the audience here. Whatever Zach, it says, like, looks like everyone's saying Hatton and Brooks. Hatton and Brooks it is. All right. Hatton and Brooks, listen, from the standpoint of the top of the field, it does seem like there's probably like four tier, maybe five. I'll say there's five in my book, at least. There's five tier A golfers. Brooks being one of them, and you know how Brooks plays in the major championship. So getting Brooks even at 10-8, which if you're looking for one of those tier A, it can almost look like a discount. So I like the Brooks pick. Hatton's a value. I'm okay with Hatton. I wouldn't have expected him to go in the first round here. Someone I will play, but I'm not like super high on this week. We'll start with you here, Spence. Are you on Hatton or Brooks at all?
I'll talk a little bit about Brooks because I feel like every single major championship that I do shows for or write articles throughout the space, my takeaway is always I am out on Brooks Koepka. Like, every single time, and this is not what's going to be this week, Joel, but every single time we get into these decision-making processes, it's like there's this public perception that's always baked into the price, whether that's the outright totals we're talking about, these moves up the board in price that you want to get. Like, I know that what we've gotten more recently with it is going to be the high-end marks that we can turn to here. But I really like Brooks Koepka, and that's coming from somebody who never gives that answer. He was first in my model. I looked at major championships as a weight, and that's something that's obviously going to make Brooks look great. There was a 10% weight put into that from all the strokes gained data that I pulled. I also look specifically at PGA championships, and there's no world you can't be number one overall in a model when you've won three of the past six. So, like, those are the most basic answers to talk about there. But for me, when I pulled the data, it was this course specific outlook in the expected strokes gain for Valhalla. That is that secondary answer to the mix here that really carried the weight for me, because a lot of these PGA championships are very similar to begin with. You need quality long iron play. You need to be good quality total driver. Want to gear that a little bit towards distance. And then you need to get this increase in putting on similar green complexes. Brooks puts together the ideal outcome. And I think for me, even beyond any of those things I just talked about, give him Zoysia fairways and bent grass greens. And go look historically what he's done on those particular surfaces. Brooks is the most elite player in this field in my model when I looked at that. So, you know, he's coming off of a live win. He's getting here with form. Brooks is the type of guy that can stand up to Scottie Scheffler and believe in his head that he's actually going to take him down. And he doesn't have to go in week in and week out. And he hasn't suffered defeat after defeat like a lot of these other players have. I really like Brooks this week. Like, I kind of think Brooks is going to win this golf tournament.
I think you made a good point. One thing I want to add about Brooks is the type of golfer. It's the opposite feeling you get to Rory, in the sense of, like, if Rory's in the lead on Saturday going into Sunday, you're a little nervous. You're like, is he going to hold on? He's playing well, but what's he going to do? If Brooks is in the lead on Saturday going into Sunday, you're like, it's over. It's Brooks won. No one's going to catch him or chase him. And that's just kind of how the kind of cold-bloodedness of Brooks and in these bigger tournaments where it's like, you know, you almost give Brooks a higher score in a major than you would a regular tournament because of, you know, how he approaches these things. So I am with you on that. David, you're on the clock with your second pick. Boy, love your take on both Brooks Koepka and Tyrrell Hatton.
Yeah, and to avoid any gate, I'll just say that the first Bryson nomination came in before the picks were open, so picks start after I've made my last selection. So I think that may have been where a little bit of the confusion came from team audience there. So definitely Hatton and Koepka. I've checked the record. The transcript says you guys got Hatton and Koepka. So when Bryson goes and wins the tournament, I don't want any complaining next week from team audience, okay? Brooks Koepka, I mean, look, he's the defending champion. We know what he does in major championships. No matter how he's playing, he tends to turn up at these and just be in contention no matter what. And the fact he's coming in now off a victory, he's coming to a place where, you know, he's the defending champion after winning last year at Oak Hill. I expect a strong showing from Koepka. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. Hatton's a really interesting one. I think of those two selections, Hatton's the one that I'm a little more like on the fence with. I do wonder if he's got the requisite driving distance to really be successful here. He's never finished better than 10th in the PGA Championship before, despite many times trying. Then at the US Open, he's finished 6th once and then no better than 21st in all his attempts at the US Open as well. And if we're looking at like a really long golf course that could get firm and fast, where the rough is going to be pretty thick, I do wonder if maybe Hatton may struggle a bit out there, would be my only comment.
There you have it. I love it. I love it. All right, David, you got Rory. How are you following this up with your second pick?
Yeah, so after Spencer Stoll, Joaquin Neiman with the first selection, I've got to go and grab a bit of value to balance out this build with Rory McIlroy. And I'm going back to a name last week that I played and talked about the fact he'd added a lot of driving distance to his game. And he played very well at Quail Hollow, the tournament he's found a little bit of a success in previously. And that's Corey Connors. I mean, Corey Connors has added a ton of distance to his game. A lot of people are missing it. I'm going to stick on that while the iron's hot. 13th last week, and most impressive for me about what he did last week in that signature event was not just that the finishing position, but it was how he did it. He was second in the field for strokes gained approach. He lost around the green. He lost putting. We know that's what can happen with Corey Connors, but to still get that high-end finish with basically no short game just speaks to the fact that Corey Connors is striping the ball at the moment. He's got a very good record at the Masters as well. He's tended to putt really well there. We've got bent grass greens here again this week as well. So I think he's a real value at 7,600. And a lot of people are going to avoid him this week because they're going to go, Corey Connors, not long off the tee. Well, go and look at what Corey Connors has been doing with driving distance in 2024 because he has absolutely added speed to his swing and distance to his game.
I love it. You mentioned him last week. And I agree. I think he's – and Corey Connors is the type of golfer that kind of goes on these streaks where he's playing really well. He has like a couple-month period where he gets good results and he kind of streaks off. I think this is a time to play Corey Connors. And he's typically one of those value plays that – in stronger fields will play out for you. So the other guy at 7,600, he definitely has helped him upside. So I definitely endorse that pick. Spence, would love some feedback from you. Will you be playing Corey Connors at all this week?
Yeah, I think he's one of the better values in this field. There were essentially three golfers when, and a profile will be deeper than this of what makes somebody a value. This is 10% of the weight of my model, but I do think it's noteworthy to at least include here. So I looked at fairway bunker GIR percentage, and I also looked at rough proximity. There were three players in this field that graded inside of the top 10 for both of those two metrics. Corey Connors was one of those three names. If we circle back to this at the end, I'll name who the other two were if anybody wants to know. But I think Corey Connors is one of the better values in the field right now at 7,600.
Boom. There you have it. We are aligned on that. All right. I am up and I am happy how this felt to me. I wanted this to be my second pick, and I'm going to get Benny Ann. Red hot Benny Ann. Another guy who, if you're talking about a driver that is heated up and added distance, Benny Ann's one of the longest guys on tour right now. So distance is not going to be an issue for him. And he is just red hot. And that is how I like to play guys going into a major, third at the Wells Fargo, T4 at the Byron Nelson, 67th at the Heritage, but that really was never a great setup for him. So if you ignore that, you can go one beyond that. He had a T16 at the Masters, showed up at a major. So obviously you don't have concerns about him kind of collapsing in the big spot. At this price here, you don't even need him to get you a top five, right? If he gets you in the top 10, that will easily pay off. And you're going to need to find some of these value plays. If you're going to play Scheffler, you kind of got to hit on a couple value plays to make that salary work. So he was my definite first target there. And the last endorsement of him is I'm seeing about 14% on ownership, which for his price range is a little bit high, but in the grand scheme of things, if it stays at 14%, I'd be happy to play that percentage with him here. So I'll pause and we'll go to you first, David. Will you be playing Benny Ann this week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, he's playing at such a high level. Is World Golf Rankings 23rd at the moment. Data Golf agree he's 25th in the world, according to them and their model. And look, he's coming in off a fourth at the CJ Cup Byron Nelson. That's also played on these Zoysa fairways. It's a pretty polarizing grass type. We've talked about it before. It retains a lot more water, so you can get flyers from this, and some players hate that. They hate the nature of these fairways, and sometimes it just tees the ball up really nicely, and they've said it's like it feels like you're playing off a tee every time from the fairway as well. So he finished fourth there and then backed it up with the Wells Fargo, finishing third. And the notable thing is the putter looks like it's come back, right? And that was the concern with Benny Ahn for that little stretch there, was he was losing putter with his putter between sort of the Texas Open, the Masters, the RBC Heritage. Well, putter's back. He's driving it long. He's a really good approach player. He's not the most accurate off the tee, but he also doesn't get like too wayward. And I think that's the right recipe this week. Of you, whenever you're driving it as long as someone like Benny Ahn is, you are going to lose the golf ball a little bit because you're going to have like a 60-yard dispersion off the tee with these guys. And so the fact that he's got no huge miss in his game, I think, is a real asset of this course. Spencer mentioned it's heavily bunkered around the fairways where it narrows. That's what like typical of a Nicklaus design. He likes to put these bunkers in those landing areas and make you really question what you're doing. So as long as he's keeping that big miss out of game, I could see him very easily finishing in the top 10.
Oh, there you have it. I love it. I love it. Spence, you got two. Started with Neiman. How are you following that up?
So when I started with Neiman at the top, it was essentially one of these viewpoints for me where Scotty, Rory, Koepka, and the player I'm going to take right now, I was fine getting any of them that fell back to me. And it doesn't necessarily mean that this would be my first choice of the group. I do think that from an ownership standpoint, there's a little bit of leverage compared to some of these other names that we could talk about, but I'm going to take John Rahm at 11,400. It's the same sentiment of what I talked about with Neiman, where, look at what his outright price has done. He was an 8-to-1 golfer here at the PGA Championship last year. He's 12-to-1 at the Masters. He provides this disappointing performance. All of a sudden, he drifts to 20-to-1 at a lot of books on Monday. I think you can still find some 20s if you shop around. I just thought he was one of the best outright values on the board before this week started. And you can make the argument from a price tag outlook here. Yeah, he's a little bit more expensive than some of these other names that we want to compare him to. But I think the ownership also creates that leverage that you're looking for on the back end of this. So I really like Rahm. I'm that to me, if he wins this tournament, that's going to be what my best week ends up being here. So I will take John Rahm at 11,400. And then for my second pick, I'm going to take somebody who was the darling of the industry last week. And we got a very disappointing performance to where it was a bad day one, great day two, a collapse again during the weekend. But, you know, I think that we have gotten enough consistency with this player over the past 2 years that this is no longer the boom or bust commodity that he once was. He is 12th in my model in expected weighted strokes gain total for Valhalla. He has all the scrambling metrics you would want to see, as well as an additional top 20 return in weighted scoring. I'm going to take Sahith Theegala here at 8,100. If everybody is going to all of a sudden not go back to the well here, depending on exactly where we're looking, this is fringe 10% ownership one way or the other.
I love the Theegala pick. I was actually, right before you took him, thinking about how I was going to rearrange my strategy here to get him in my lineup. To me, the biggest thing is 8,100 for the way he's been playing is too low. I mean, I have him in that upper tier. He should be at least in the 9K range for me. So I think he's just one of the better values with plenty of upside in a major championship. So to kind of build out these lineups and get some studs in there, I think he makes a ton of sense. We'll go to you on this one, David. Are you on Theegala or Rahm this week?
Yeah, I think Spence made some really good points there. John Rahm is surprisingly low owned. And as Spence alluded to, like, the Masters performance was disappointing. But like, how often do we see defending champions come out and play really well in the Masters the year after they've won? I mean, when you've won the Masters, it comes with all of these obligations. You've got to host the champions dinner. You've got media just every single day hounding you. You've got to do all these interviews. Like, it is distracting. It's probably the hardest tournament to defend in the world, not just because of the field, but because of all the extra stuff you have to do off the course. And so I can very easily forgive John Rahm for that. And you're getting a talented golfer who's going to be low owned, and has got every chance to go out and win this tournament. There is no flaw at any aspect of John Rahm's game. So really like that play. I really love the potential for Sahith Theegala as well. It feels like he's getting to that stage where the talent is leading up to somewhere where this could be a major championship winner at some point very, very soon. I do really like that pick. I think of all the golf courses, this is kind of the right kind of recipe for Theegala. Plenty of distance, the approach base really good. And despite the disappointing result last week, I'm pleased to see that almost all of that came with around the green and on the putter. You know, when it's short game, it's something that can be rectified pretty quickly. And Theegala is very much a feel player. He really is. And he uses his hands a lot throughout his swing and with his chipping especially. So, you know, that can come and go pretty quickly. And I love the upside that you can get with him there at 8,100.
Boom. There you have it, endorsed. All right. I am torn between two guys here with my next pick. And I'm going to start with and hope another guy comes back to me. I'm going to go with Alex Noren. Listen, this is not a guy you're going to look at and say, oh, this is the perfect profile for this course. That's not the case. But at 7,200, he has outplayed his price tag over the course of the last 2 to 3 months. He's just been playing spectacular golf, and he shouldn't be this low. So I think it's just too good a value to pass up on. To give you some context, since March 3rd, his results have been 9th, 19th, 11th, 14th, 23rd, 3rd, and 24th. So his worst result since March 3rd was 24th at the Wells Fargo last week. And that was really because he lost 4 strokes putting, right? His ball striking was still good that week. He actually hasn't lost strokes ball striking, at least on approach, since that March 3rd tournament. He's gained strokes every single week, both around the green and on approach, and he's only lost strokes driving in one of those tournaments, and it was barely lost a percentage of a stroke. So he is hitting the ball really well. Alex Noren's a vet. He's not going to be scared off by the big moment in the major championship. He's another value guy who I think gives you plenty of top 20 equity and upside to squeeze in guys like Scheffler. So he feels like a safe play. I think you can play him in both tournaments and in cash, but I especially like him in a cash lineup for sure. Let's try you first, Spence. Are you on Alex Noren at all this week?
Joel, I get caught in the Alex Noren windstorm quite frequently. Like I was talking to Sticks Picks about this on our podcast, and there is an argument to be made that the two of us were just a year too early on what Alex Noren has produced this season. I will say that my model didn't necessarily love him this week. There were concerns with some of the weighted total driving, the ball striking metrics in general, but I think it comes down to you don't have a ton of ownership with him. If you trust the form that he has produced, this is a value. If you look into some of the ball striking metrics and you find the red flags there, which is what my model is at least highlighting, there are concerns to be found here, but it's one of those profiles where there's more safety in the profile than there is upside, which is kind of what you were probably talking about a little bit there, Joel. But there's also no, I don't want to say no ownership. I see about 6.5% to 7% right now, but that's very relative to everybody who's priced next to him. So I am probably not going to personally play him, but I don't think he is like some massive fade for me within my model either.
There you have it. All right. David, would love your take on Alex Noren this week. And then you're on the clock with your third pick.
Yeah, look, I think that my concern with Noren comes with the driving distance, whether the course is going to play too long for him. In saying that, he's one of the best over 200 yards with his approach. He really does excel in that metric. As you mentioned, the result at the Wells Fargo, if you can finish 24th in that signature event and lose that many strokes putting for a guy who, like we know, is one of the best putters on the PGA Tour, is a promising recipe as well. And to add to that, I do see a lot of wind in the forecast, particularly on Saturday, is going to be really howling. Noren's one of the best wind players in the game, and a lot of that comes from his excellent short game. He's able to scramble, he's able to make the putts when he needs to, he's able to keep that momentum going, let alone the fact that his iron play actually performs very, very well in those high winds as well. And kind of segues into my pick, where I'm going to go and get some value actually down at $6,000. One of the best wind players in the game, just continually shows up at tournaments where it's extremely windy, tons of driving distance, and an excellent putter. And that's Lucas Herbert. He's going to be he's going to be pretty forgotten because he's on the live tour. Not many people are going to be watching him, but he's an amazing wind player. His putter's going to keep him in the game. The Southern Hills PGA Championship.
I'm not sure if I'm frozen or David is.
David is frozen. It is not you this time, Joel.
All right. Well, we got the pick in. Unfortunately, we have a frozen David. While we wait for him to get back on, Spence, are you on Lucas Herbert all this week?
I mean, I think David was bringing up an interesting point when it comes to a lot of these LIV golfers have seen too far of a shift, whether it's the price tag we're looking at or the ownership that's they're going to be used for. So Herbert brings that distance plus putting sort of a return here that at least gives him a chance at this course. I don't have a take one way or another on this. I probably lean towards no, but I think at $6,000, there's upside to at least be found in that profile.
All right. I am I'm going to try and get our draft board back up while we wait for David, because obviously this isn't the look we're going for on the draft cast tonight, but I don't have it. So hold on. I can get it in a second. While I pull this up, Spence, remind the audience that they have two, so they are on the clock. We will get those two in. We need them locked, and we'll get you. I would love to get your take on some of their nominations as they come in.
Yeah, and you know, I guess now that we're sitting here and the draft has also just been thrown upside down, I will mention the two names. I mean, there's no point to allude to there being three names that fit inside the top 10 of those things and then not end up saying it. And I'll probably end up forgetting at the end of the day. I see David is back now, but Thorbjørn Olesen and Justin Thomas were the other two that fit inside the top 10 from the proximity, from the rough and from bunkers. So for whatever that's worth for everybody out there.
There you go. I love it. Audience, first pick is at least in Keith Mitchell, which I will definitely endorse. I was considering getting him into my lineup with one of my next picks. He's been playing well. He's been really good with the driver. He's got the distance, in form, under 7K. A lot to like about Keith Mitchell. I think he's a really savvy pick. David, welcome back. Will you be playing Keith Mitchell at all this week?
Yeah, sorry, guys. I mean, look, it was bound to happen at some point here in Manila that the internet would completely cut out on me and leave me mid-ramble on Lucas Herbert. But I just keep talking for quite some time because you guys were live for me, and I produced some brilliant content while you guys weren't listening. So sorry you all missed out on that, but look, love Lucas Herbert at this golf course, and we saw that at Southern Hills when he finished 13th at the PGA Championship. We tipped him up at like 200-1, 250-1 that week, and he played very, very well in an extremely windy PGA Championship. So I like him with the wind in the forecast, and I love what Keith Mitchell's been doing off the tee. His performance with driver is just really going to be a very, very good asset in Kentucky. Obviously not too far from his alma mater in Georgia as well. So that's obviously a positive for him as well. And yeah, the question with Keith Mitchell is, can he show up at a major championship? Because it's not something that we've seen him do all that often. So I do like that selection. And then looks like, according to Zach, we've got Cam Smith as well with Team Audience.
Cam Smith, lock it in. You know, Cam Smith is an interesting one. He's under 10K. But there's some other guys up there that I like a lot. Cam Smith does tend to play well in these bigger tournaments and rise to the occasion. So I do think he could be a sneakier play up there up top. I'm going to go ahead and not endorse the pick. I'm probably not going to be playing much Cam Smith this week. But I can understand the audience direction there. We'll start with you here, Spence. Are you on Mitchell or Smith?
I think Mitchell is one of the better values in this tournament. It's an incorrect price tag for a player that doesn't necessarily have the major championship pedigree to pull from. Cameron Smith, there's one other golfer that would fit into this mix too. But if you look at this $9,000 and up range, Cameron Smith is essentially the one name for me, and specifically from a statistical outlook here. I don't love him this week. He has a lack of distance off the tee. He also mixes that with a lack of accuracy. That's not necessarily the blueprint that I'm looking for Valhalla. So there's no ownership around him. So you're going to at least get some sort of leverage if you're correct with that. But I would make an argument that there are multiple names directly or in the vicinity of him, beneath him, that would carry similar ownership and much more upside with their skill sets.
There you have it. I think we are aligned there. David, would love your take on Cam Smith, and then you're on the clock with your fourth pick.
Yeah, look, I'll just echo what Spence said, I think. You know, I do have concerns off the tee with Cam Smith. But the flip side of that, and this is where your contest selection really makes a difference, right? Like, Cam Smith showing up at a major is not unsurprising, right? And so if you're getting a Cameron Smith who's like 7% owned, which is kind of what I'm seeing at the moment, because, you know, as Cave Ball says in the chat, you know, I don't love him at the price. Well, everybody else is also going to look at him and say, I don't love him at the price, you know? So if you can get that leverage as a result of that in those large GPPs, and he comes out and finishes second, for example, well, suddenly you've got something on the rest of the field that nobody else has. It can be the difference maker in those millie maker type contests if you can get it right. And sometimes it just has to be that you get a bit uncomfortable and you're taking someone who has obvious major championship pedigree. And the one thing I'd say for Smith as well, when he won the Open Championship, obviously St. Andrews extremely exposed, lots of wind. Well, we are going to see lots of wind in the forecast here as well. So that may be a benefit for him if I was looking at positives.
There you have it. All right. You got average salary remaining about $8,100 per pick. Who are you looking at with your fourth pick?
Yeah, I've been doing the calculations in the background and just want to remind Spence that he absolutely ruined my draft this week by taking Neiman with the first pick, because it's going to work out that I would have exactly the right amount for Neiman if all goes to plan. So I'm going to take Sam Burns this week at 8,500. It really feels for Sam Burns that the major championship's just the one thing that's been missing in his resume. And he's got tons of distance off the tee. I don't think people realize quite how long he is. And a lot of that comes from his ability to generate a really high ball speed. So that's not just coming with the driver, it's coming with his irons as well, which I think is a real asset for him on a course that we know that's going to play long. His strongest approach metrics come from over 150 to 200 and 200 plus yards. That's going to be really key this week. He was 20th at the PGA Championship back in 2022. So he has performed better in the PGA Championship than in the other majors. And 13th last week at Quail Hollow, I thought was really promising on a golf course that I think is going to play quite similar. So for me, he's a really good value at 8,500. And I suspect that Sam Burns could surprise a few and somehow rock up in the top five by the end of the week. So I think he's a really good value at that number.
Interesting. I'll be honest, Sam Burns was not on my radar this week, but I typically like Sam Burns. And at 8,500, David's on him. I'm intrigued. So, I think it's interesting. Spence, how about you? Will you be on Sam Burns at all this week?
See, this is where I think there's interesting discussions to be had because, at least according to my model here, Sam Burns is quote-unquote overpriced. Like, that's maybe the one different outlook that I would have than David there. But there is no ownership with him. There's a positive trajectory for upside in my model. This is more of where I am trying. Like, if I'm going to throw a random dart at this board, I would so much rather do it with Sam Burns than a Cameron Smith. Like, there is real upside in the profile of Sam Burns.
That makes sense, and especially because with Sam Burns, you can do more, right? With Cam Smith, you kind of have to have Cam Smith be one of your top two guys. With Burns, he could be three. You know, you can be a more balanced approach. So it's definitely a lineup building strategy involved there for sure. All right. I am on the clock here, and I am going to take another guy who is kind of in the same vein as Noren in that he's in great form. On paper, he's not going to be a great course fit. He's not a longest hitter, but I'm going to play the form. I'm going to play the way he's playing. I'm going to take Siwoo Kim. Siwoo Kim has been fantastic over the last few tournaments that he's teed it up in. His ball striking numbers have been especially impressive, which is what's turned me on to Siwoo and why I'm taking him here. But like I said, he's not going to wow you with his driving distance. He's not even going to have the best proximity for a course like this where he's not the longest iron player. And, you know, he's also not the best putter. So I'm giving you a lot of reasons not to play Siwoo. But I will say his actual ball striking approach play, his around the green play over the last 3 months have been spectacular, absolutely spectacular. He's gaining strokes in every tournament he's played in around the green, as well as ball striking, and a lot of them, not just one stroke. I mean, in his last two tournaments, he's gained 5.5 strokes ball striking each. In his last three outings, he's gotten three top 20s, a 30th at the Masters, a top 20 at the Houston Open, a top 10 at the Players. He's just playing great golf. If he can make some putts somehow, some way this week, I think you get another top 20 result from Siwoo. So at under another guy under 8K, I like Siwoo Kim this week. Let's go to you, David. Will you be playing Siwoo at all?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you already listed all the reasons not to pick Siwoo when you pick Siwoo. So I can't really go with that route. Look, I do have concerns about the distance, but I would say he is really strong with over 200 yards. I mean, he's strong throughout the bag, but I mean, there's only a handful of names that are actually better than Siwoo on the tour from long irons. And look, if you're getting a player with just like immense ability to ball strike the hell out of it, well, PGA championships are typically won by players who find greens. Like, and a lot of it is about actually just finding the center of the green, putting it in play, and then trying to make a putt. And if not, you two putt, you make a par, and you move on. Even par is going to be a really good score this week at Valhalla. Like, if you play even par each week, each round, you will finish in the top 20 this week. I can guarantee that. So his ability to find greens, I think, is going to be a real asset. And if you're getting a discount in terms of pricing compared to, I mean, put it this way, Data Golf have him ranked nearly 30 points higher than his World Golf ranking. His World Golf ranking is 41st. Data Golf rank him as the 17th best player in the world at the moment. You're getting him down in the 7,700 range at 10% ownership for someone who is just striping it at the moment. So I find that really interesting.
I love it. There you have it. Spence, you got two here. Would love your take on Siwoo. And then where are you going with your next two picks?
Really, the only true negative I see with Siwoo, the PGA Championship results leave a lot to be desired. I do think he's very popular because of the recent form that we've gotten, like over 10% for the volatility that he's bringing when you can directly compare him to other names in this mix. I don't really have a take outside of the ownership. I tend to think he's actually a pretty decent fit for this course, despite all the PGA Championship results and everything that Joel laid out from top to bottom of why Siwoo is the worst player in this tournament. But I think he's fine. He's a very neutral value that has great form leading into the week. For my pick, I'm trying to, I guess, at this point, compete with what the audience is doing of who can put together more live golfers inside of their build. And I'm going to take Dustin Johnson at $8,000 here. There's a couple things about this play. So first, I understand we are asking a lot for him to be competing in major championships. He's made the move to live. He is a golfer that needs those reps on the PGA Tour much more than most players. He can go a little bit, let's just say, wayward with his antics and stuff. And it's nice to have him out playing golf because that's usually the best version that we've gotten from him. But when I have run numbers, and I have said this for almost every single major championship over the past 2 years here, he's usually the biggest fade candidate that I have in my sheet. And I try to find him in matchups. I try to figure out a way to take him on. The two times he was not one of the largest fade candidates, 2022 Open Championship, 2023 US Open, those were two events where he finished inside the top 10. So I'm going to hope that my numbers end up being correct here. These are numbers that I am pulling that could be a little bit flawed and skewed because we don't get week in and week out data from him now being on live, but there is a first place grade in my model for off the tee production at long courses with thick rough. You can make an argument of what that actually means when he is not adding to that every single week, like a lot of these other players. And it could be some of this data that is just weak at this point, but I thought Dustin was too cheap for the upside that he does possess. I know what I'm signing up for from the recent results that we've gotten, but I think Dustin at his best is still better than this $8,000 price tag. So I'm going to roll the dice there and live with whatever the results end up being. And then I'm going to have to now save some salary here with making that pick. And I'm going to take Kurt Kitayama at $6,500. Kitayama's ability with some of this weighted proximity and the distance that he brings is very, very enticing for a $6,500 golfer. There's a handful of names, and Keith Mitchell would be one of them, maybe, that my model thinks has upside, which maybe hasn't necessarily produced the upside in some of these events. Kitayama is the 1B to that version there, where Kitayama is 15th in my model in weighted proximity. You look at the I've talked a lot this week about fairway bunkers and rough proximity. He's 11th in my model there. He has the distance that places him inside the top 25 of my sheet. There's a lot of these ball striking metrics that really like him for this tournament. And there's going to be negative traits that you can find from anybody in this $6,000 or less section, but the upside marks that he actually can bring to the table give you this hidden top 10 equity. And I mean, look, he came fourth last year at the PGA Championship. I don't think it's inconceivable that he produces something very similar again. So I like the upside that Kitayama has here, and I see 6.5% ownership. I think that that's still perfectly fine.
I agree. Kitayama is now a stolen pick from me, as he was one of the my last picks I was going to put in there. And I agree with your reasoning behind DJ. he's more talented than the price tag. Maybe not. We don't know what the form is. Maybe not playing at his top TJ form, but he's not 9K and he's not 9,500. So you know what upside you get from DJ. And at 8K, I definitely think he's worth a shot. And upside, I like the way your lineup is coming together there. Go to you, David. Are you on Dustin Johnson or Kirk Cunningham this week?
I mentioned before I took the Burns pick how Spence had stolen Neiman and ruined the end of the draft for me as a result. And the route I would have wanted to go, which I was going to be $100 short from, would have been to go Kitayama and then Wyndham Clark, for example. I would have been $100 outside it, and Neiman would have been the perfect fit. Zach mentions the fact that, you know, death taxes and David can be complaining about a pick being stolen is the regular recipe, which is true, but that is how I put the jinx on golfers, okay? Is I comment about this pick being stolen multiple times, how much I love him, then they'll miss the cut, okay? So that's all. I'm just making sure that I'm putting all the hex on Spencer's stealing of Joaquin Neiman, the first pick there. So I love Kirk Kitayama. That's where I would have gone. I think his ball striking numbers are really promising. If we think that this course is going to play really long, you need to be a bit straight off the tee, you need to be ball striking it, and then you can kind of make your way around the greens. Well, Bay Hill's a really good example of that. The Arnold Palmer Invitational, we all saw what Kirk Kitayama did at that tournament, defeating a really high-end field as a triple-figure outsider. We were on him that week, and he played incredibly well. And when he's in the mix, he's the kind of guy who tends to stay there. And so I like the mettle that you get from Kirk Kitayama. It's like strokes gained, mental fortitude, which isn't something that you can measure. Xander lacks it, but Kirk Kitayama seems to have it no matter the names around him.
There you have it. I love it. All right. I'm back on the clock. I have three guys I am thinking about, and I have to kind of settle on one, and I'm going to go with the one that going into Spencer's pick was the last, and now I think I'm going to take him. So I'm all over the place, if I'm being honest. But I'm going to stick with Strep Straka. Jeez, I can't say his name. Sepp Straka. You know, the reasoning being he's really stepped up the last three tournaments. He's been playing well. He's got two top tens. His ball striking, his driving has been there. Great putting. Not great around the green. I'm thinking this could be a week where that might just be neutralized, right? It's not, you know, we talked about the scrambling and all that. But if he has one of those great weeks, ball striking, and he can kind of avoid some of the trouble he's gotten himself into around the greens, the way his putter has looked and his ball striking, I think there's a lot of upside with him. And that's what I'm going for. So, it's a riskier pick, but I think Sepp Straka makes sense. I think it's a good fit for his game, especially right now while he's playing really well. So I'll start with you, Spence. Are you at all on Sepp Straka at all this week?
If you dive into some of the Zoysia grass fairways, Straka is a really large climber in my model, specifically in that area. The weighted proximity numbers also tend to like him for the most part. I guess my one concern, if there's something to talk about, and it's a very similar answer to what I mentioned with Siwoo Kim, it's just we have two 10% owned 7K golfers that have a lot of volatility to their potential production. Like, my guess would be one of Straka or Siwoo massively ends up disappointing people that take him. I don't know if I love the two of them together for that reason, but some of that Zoysia grass stuff, Joel, is definitely worth looking into because there is real upside in the profile depending on how you run the data here.
Well, there you have it. The Zoysia grass, Straka likes it. I think it's a factor, is another reason to maybe creep that way in making your decision. David, you're on the clock here with your fifth pick. We would love your take on Sepp Straka this week as well.
Yeah, I probably prefer the Straka play to Siwoo. I know that Straka lacks off the tee in terms of driving distance a little bit, but he can just absolutely go out and get absolutely hot, right? We've all seen it. The upside's there. And I mean, if you told me there was a golfer at 7,500 who in his recent majors has gone seventh, missed cut, second, 16th at the Masters this year, And then he's coming in off four consecutive top 16, starting at the Masters, then fifth at the RBC Heritage signature event. He was 11th at Zurich Classic and then eighth at the Wells Fargo, another signature event. If you were telling me that you could get a golfer at 7,500 with those kind of credentials, I'd be jumping all over it. And it does seem like the public are clicking onto that. That's why you're getting kind of that 10 to 11% ownership, which in a 156-man field is going to be pretty high. But of the two, I'd probably go Striker over Siwoo for me. And it's based on the history that he's kind of putting together. Because anyone else who was coming in here with that kind of history, we'd be like, oh, yeah, like it looks like they're trending towards a victory.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a really good point. Actually, I was actually surprised, even though, yes, for his positioning and price, his ownership is high. I actually thought it would have been higher at this point. So I was okay with taking that, eating that ownership this week. All right, David, you got about 8K per pick left. Who are you going for here?
Yeah, look, and as I mentioned, I would have loved to have rounded this out with like a Neiman Kitayama. I think would have been a really nice construction with the build that I've had so far. Would have given me a ton of upside across the board, even down to Lucas Herbert. I think it's got the ability to go and surprise some people. So obviously I can't do that because Spencer's stolen both of them. So I'm going to need to go and get a little bit different here. And actually, I'm going to take Matt Fitzpatrick. I think that Matt Fitzpatrick has been playing a lot better golf than people giving him credit for. We all know that he's added the driving distance, but I think the fact that we're looking like a wet golf course, there's some more rain in the forecast, there's thunderstorms, there's wind. He's one of the best mudders in the game. His ability to play in wet conditions is really an asset for him. He is going to lack a little bit off the tee compared to others, even though he has added that driving distance, which I accept. But he's playing really well in the majors as well, and finished fifth at Southern Hills. So if we're looking at like at Windy PGA Championship, he played really well at that event. And that wasn't a short golf course either. Fifth at the Players Championship earlier this year. He was 22nd at the Masters as well. So Matt Fitzpatrick has got heaps of upside and obviously won the US Open, a really long golf course as well. So I think that he's got the ability to come out and surprise a few people. And I'm getting like no ownership on Fitzpatrick at the moment. So I think that that's a great leverage for him as well.
I love it. I love it. Audience, you are on the clock. I see some nominations in. You need two, so get your final two in. I think there's an interesting narrative going on here. Before I pass it to Spence for his take on Fitzpatrick, and that narrative is me and Spence have one player left, and we have the exact same budget. So we're very good chance we'll be fighting over a similar player. And David's budget isn't too much ahead of ours. So we could all be looking at the same players with our last picks here. Audience, you guys have the ability with, you know, a little bit more money spent, but not much, to try and just completely mess our drafts up. Take the guys that we might want and then leave us scrambling. So there is some strategy here from Team Audience on how they wrap up these final two picks, whether they want to go for what's best for their team. If they want to cause chaos in the draft, you can go either way. While we wait for those two picks to be finalized, Spence, will you be playing Matt Fitzpatrick at all this week?
Yeah, I think he's a good leverage play. There's essentially five or six names in this $8,000 and up section. It would be, and this is like where the best leverage in my model would sit. It's Patrick Reed, Dustin Johnson, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland. Like, those are the names that have the best leverage if you're trying to throw some darts down here of like to be a little bit different. I like Fitzpatrick's added distance that he brings to the mix. I think he's a nice, interesting fit into a lineup. Like, if I'm directly comparing him and Jordan Spieth, like, there's similar ownership there. I would rather play Fitzpatrick and the upside he possesses in my model. So I like the pick from David. I think it's a nice way to get unique in a lineup.
I would agree with that take as well. All right, it looks like the two audience picks are in. I'm going off Zach Jeffers as my source of truth. And if so, the first pick is Jägerbomb, Steven Jaeger, and the second pick is Burmeister. I actually think they're both really strong picks. How you guys ended this pick here at the end of the draft. Two value plays that are both in my player pool. We'll start with you, Spence. Are you on either Dean Burmeister or Steven Jaeger?
Yes to Jaeger, but that's a weekly answer that I could give that you could just roll over from show to show. I'll say no to Burmeister because of ownership.
Fair enough. Fair enough. David, as the world tour truther and expert, especially interested in your take on Dean Burmeister, would love to know if you're playing Jaeger, and then you're on the clock with your last pick.
I mean, first thing, I want to shout out Zach for just mentioning the fact that I obviously have the right amount of salary to take that selection. Thank you, Zach. I appreciate everything that the team audience does. You guys are a great audience. The second question is whether you guys are saying Burmeister because of Jägermeister. Like, is it the fact that they took Steven Jaeger and then suddenly it's Dean Burmeister? Because I have it as Burmeister, but you know, that's neither here nor there. We can call him Burmeister with Jaeger.
I'll call him Dean.
Dean. Dino.
I like Burmeister better. I'm gonna stick with
Burmeister. You know, it's got kind of a nice ring to it. Yeah. So yeah, I like Dean here. Look, I think that, you know, we saw him show up at the Open Championship. So he has contended in majors. Most notably, he won at Doral. I think Doral's a really good comp for Valhalla, really long golf course. He's got tons of driving distance. He's very, very talented, very good putter as well. And so I do think he's got the ability to go out and perform here. So I do like the pick. I don't know if I'll class it as a steal because I was kind of in between two players. And I can mention who I'm going to take straight off the back of this if you like.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, so the reason why I was going to go with Chris Kirk over Dean Burmeister was the ownership difference, really. Like, Burmeister's like 11.5% owned. That's a ton of risk for me for that amount of ownership at 7,000. Chris Kirk, you're getting like no ownership on. And like, it's surprising for me, really, because of the way he's been playing. It's been absolutely fantastic. He hasn't finished worse than 44th. Since beginning of March. A lot of that has been in signature events and majors. I mean, he was 16th at the Masters. He was 10th at the RBC Heritage. He's finished 5th at the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. So if you're looking for like a windy PGA Championship, that's kind of my go-to. Another really long golf course. So despite the fact that it might look like he lacks a little bit off the tee in terms of distance, you know, he has shown up those spots before. And Chris Kirk's had a great year, obviously capped off with winning the Century to start the season with a long shot victor. But I think that he's got tons of upside. And the fact that I can get him, like at the moment, if I check my ownership numbers, like I'm getting like 3.5% versus 11.5% for Burmeister. I'll take that ownership discount every single day for a golfer who's playing very well in some of the PGA Tour's best tournaments.
There you have it. I like Rizzer. I played him last week. You know, it wasn't the best result, but he's the type of guy that can show up in a big tournament. He can compete. He's consistent. You know, I think it's a good sneaky play. I think for the reasons you said, I think he does possess that upside, and at the sneaky lower ownership, I think he makes a lot of sense, especially for big GPPs. Spence, would love your take. Will you be playing Chris Kirk?
I thought at the Masters, he was one of the better values on the board. I think when you look at 3.5% ownership here, I think he's one of the best values on the board, and you mix that in with the leverage that gets created, he's probably one of the best plays in the $6,000 section to consider.
Boom. I love it. I love it. And when Spence says one of the best, he means the second, because I'm about to take the best here with my last pick. And that is friend of the show, but not actually, but I'm going to say it that way because we are always drafting our good friend, Christian Bezuidenhout. Now, I have a little bit of a theme going with my squad in that, you know, I'm not taking all the guys that are long hitters and fit the perfect profile of those courses. I take a lot of guys that on paper you would look at and say these aren't like the typical course fit guys you would want to take here, especially highlighting Norin, Siwoo, and Seabez. But I'm playing form. And again, if I can get three really good golfers that are maybe a little bit under-owned because they don't have the perfect course profile, I'm okay with that. And I think they can still go out there and have really strong results because of the way they're playing and their price tag. So Christian Bezuidenhout is a similar profile in that his form over the last few months has been very good. He's making putts. He's not going to be the longest hitter, but the ball striking is there. I think he needs to get another. I think we do get another good result from him this week. I'd love your take, David. Will you be playing Seabez at all this week?
I won't be because of the driving distance concerns. But look, I mean, this is one thing, and we talk about this often on the show, right? Like, we kind of know what the golf course is going to play like. Like we've done our analysis, we've seen the distance, but so is everyone else. And if we all end up playing the exact same players because of the course fit, or supposed course fit, well, that's when you get these like leverage opportunities. And I think that's where you can mix in some of these guys like Siwoo or Sepp or Bezaden Houghton-Norin, because some of them are going to show up in the top 10 because they're going to absolutely strike the ball and approach, despite the fact that they lack off the tee, and they can putt lights out and they can get really hot. So in terms of like getting some leverage with upside, that kind of is a really great way to approach it. So I'm not sure that I'll play all four of them in the same lineup. I think that's a really aggressive strategy, but I think that you can mix in a few of these names, because if you just take like Patrick Rogers, Kitayama, Wyndham Clark, Benny Yarn, you take all of these long drivers, you are going to be duped. Like there are going to be other people out there who are going to play that exact same lineup, and you need to find some places to get different, which I think that you've done well here.
Boom. There you have it. I love it. Spence, I'm hoping I stole your pick. I hope you were looking at him. But if not, I'd love your take on Seabags and where are you going here with your last pick?
I think there's a lot of options to potentially consider down in, you know, the 6,600 or less range. Like, I worry about the distance ever so slightly, but for your particular build, Joel, I would make an argument that this makes it very unique and kind of gets away from some of the chalk that you had in other areas. And all of a sudden that lineup becomes very easy to insert into anything, because I don't think people are going to play Christian Bezuidenhout this week. I have no problems with him. I think Bezuidenhout was in play for me. I would make an argument that you could consider Dietrich in this particular situation. My model likes Taylor Pendrith and everything that we've seen recently. There's going to be ownership that comes with him. I think to get a little bit different with my build, and I can get half the ownership, give or take, on a player that is a very similar profile with the way that I built my model this week, I'm going to take Cameron Davis at 6,600. We saw him spike last year at this tournament, coming in fourth place. You look at some of the recent trending data, leaves a little bit to be desired, but even with that answer coming into play, like, date this to the AT&T Pebble Beach, everything is pretty much landing in the top 40 for the most part, even with this struggling statistical form that you want to look at. Like, a lot of made cuts, a lot of consistency in that profile, and then all of a sudden you add this ability for him to use his length off the tee and some of the ball striking metrics that I do have for him. So, you know, if you want to like consider Tom Hoagie, I think he makes some sense here also, but I'm kind of trying to shoot for a little bit more upside than that Hoagie profile, and Cameron Davis possesses more of that for me here if I have the mindset that I'm entering this into a large field contest and trying to figure out if I can hit something for a large amount of money.
Boom. There you have it. The picks are in. This was a great draft. You know, I think it is the way you're going to have to get different. Everyone's going to play a few guys at the top. The way you're going to have to win this draft is hitting on a few value plays. I think we have a lot of big ones in this draft that you can consider. You know, Davis was one of the guys I was considering here with my last pick as well. We've seen him rise up in a lot of these types of tournaments and occasions at 6,600. He certainly possesses the upside. David, before we wrap up the draft here, will you be playing Cameron Davis at all this week?
Yeah, look, I mean, Spence mentioned he's been showing up at the majors, right? Like, he really has. Played very well at Oak Hill, finished top five there, and then a really good performance at the Masters as well, finishing 12th. So, look, he's got plenty of distance. That's obviously known about Cam Davis, but he does tend to be a player who gets hot and then follows up with that in subsequent tournaments. So I do think he's a savvy player, and he's an option for me at 6,600 for sure.
There you have it. All right. We've been with you for a while tonight, but we're not done yet. Before we let you go, do me a favor. Hit the like button. Give us a follow. It goes a long way. We appreciate you. We know this show is all the audience. We don't go anywhere without you guys. So all of your effort in drafting with us and following along is greatly appreciated. And we're hoping we all make a lot of money in DraftKings and taking these golfers this weekend, which what should be a really fun tournament. Before we get you out of here tonight, if you're not already subscribed to WinDaily, sign up. You're going to get our picks. But not only that, after the show, we post updates where you'll get Steven's ownership article, which is the best in the business. It'll tell you the projected ownership of every golfer you'll definitely want, especially if you're playing in some of these Millie Makers this weekend. We'll post weather updates. So if anything changes around the weather, if we're seeing any edges, you'll get access to that information. And we post our outright picks. So you'll see if there's any outright bets you want to make. But sign up for Win Daily. Get in the Discord chat. Get all that extra information for tonight. We are going to leave you with our first round leaders. So we love doing the first round leader plays. We will start with you, David. I'd love to know who you're looking at in the first round leader market.
Yeah, look, and look, great shout out for Win Daily there. There's a promo link in the description. It's got all the details you need about what we do, what we're all about. It's got an exclusive promo in there, but even just go have a look and just see what we're about and see our track record and everything that you get with the promotion. It's worth having a read, regardless of whether you sign up or not. There's some free trials in there as well, so you can give it a go and see what we're all about there. So for first round leaders, it's always risky at a PGA Championship or any major for that matter to take on the top of the board, because when you've got this many class players in a field, you kind of figure that at least one of them is going to come out and shoot like 8 under or something and really take it to the rest of the field. So I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to take a bunch of value plays this week. I've actually got 6 of them because of that, but none of them are less than 66-1. And the hope in that is that we get one guy who comes out here and really spikes. And a few of the names that I'm going to mention have been picked on the show as well. So starting off at that 66-1 mark, I've got Benny Yarn and Sahith Theegala. I think they've both got the absolute upside to come out and lead after one round. Same as Sepp Straka. We know what he can do in one round of golf. You can get him at 80-1. Dean Burmester, you get at 90-1. Kirk Kitayama at 100-1. And then somebody who wasn't mentioned on the show, but had a really good performance last week. Tons of driving distance. One of the best drivers actually on the PGA Tour, if you go and dive into his statistics, is Erik van Rooyen, which you can get at 125-1, which seems very generous for a player who's performed well at other long golf courses, most notably when winning on the PGA Tour at the end of last year.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Spence, looking to you, who do you like in the first round leader market?
So I'm going to update this in the Win Daily portion of the website. That'll be up tonight and probably out tomorrow there. I'm going to give you a different answer, Joel. And I want to first touch on what Jeff asked of what's your cutoff for driving distance on this course. The way that I built my model incorporates a lot of total driving in general. I don't know if there's, I think it depends on what we're exactly talking about here. If we're looking for win equity, the cutoff would shrink down a little bit. If we're looking for safety and plays like that, I think there's a lot of golfers that don't have driving distance that are going to make a lot of sense this week. So total driving for me would probably be more of the outlook, and that's going to incorporate a little bit more driving distance than anything. But it also includes courses that have thick rough and how do you perform off the tee there, and courses that are long with thick rough, how do you perform off the tee there? And that kind of is how I merged my model for the play that I'm going to give here, Joel. And I normally give head-to-head wagers and they move very quickly, so I'm a little disgruntled that this number has not moved, and this is more juice on a play than I normally would get to begin with here. But there is a number over at Bet Rivers. It's still currently there right now. It's minus 129. That's as much juice as you'll ever see me lay on a bet. I like Shane Lowry this week, minus 129 over Tom Kim. Tom Kim was the single biggest fade candidate that I had on the board. You can tune into different shows and hear me talk a little bit more in depth about that. But usually on a Tuesday, that number is still not around and it's already left the station. The price is still there for anybody who wants to grab that. And hopefully we can finally move it.
There you have it. Fade Tom Kim this week, betting against him. 129 on Shane Lowry. I like it. I have 4 first-round leader plays for us this week. I will start with the longest odds. I'm going to go with Taylor Gooch. I just have a feeling he might show up this week on a hot round and kind of talk some smack about, you know, him being involved in the tournament. And I don't think he holds on, but I think he comes out strong. So it's 75-1. I like the narrative around Taylor Gooch. And then I'm going to head up with some shorter odds. I really like Bryson DeChambeau. It wasn't mentioned on our show, but I think he came out hot At the Masters. I think he can come out hot again this week. And obviously, you know, he's going to have the length at 35-1. I also have my eyes on, where did I put it? Oh, your first round leader. Listen, don't be surprised. He was mentioned on the show, but he wasn't drafted. You know, we've seen Wyndham Clark come out hot time and time again in these majors and start have a really good start. I think Wyndham Clark could have a really good start this week as well at 45-1. And I'm going to leave you with, you know, it's funny, but we kind of gave this strategy last week and it almost paid off. It didn't pay off, but it was close. Scotty Scheffler, you know, he's what, 4-1 to win the tournament? That's a really small odds. I think that's not even a bet. But to get him as a first round leader, you get 14-1 odds. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he comes out and he's your first round leader. It seems like the better way to bet Scotty at 14-1. So that will be my four plays this week. Again, major championship season is the fun season. I'm super excited for this week to tee off. But don't forget to sign up for Win Daily. Get into Discord, especially this week. There are some weather updates that you're going to want to follow, as there can be some wind and some conditions that you're going to want to be on top of before locking in any bets or lineups. So make sure you sign up. You'll definitely get a return on your investment within a week or two, because some of our plays have been very hot. We'll post these lineups on Twitter. Let us know which one you think is going to win. The winning lineup we will crown next week. We'll crown the champion. Everyone gets to talk smack, and we'll do it again then. Did I forget anything?
So two things before we get out of here, and we'll let everybody go in 1 second. I was a little surprised to see Bryson DeChambeau not drafted, just with the amount of ownership that's out in the industry right now. Like, that's the one name that's around 20% plus that the four of us did not decide to take. So interesting outcome there. I also want to touch on what Zach said of State of the Union here on Jason Day. Did you guys see that picture of Day walking and how jacked his legs were? This guy is built to win a major championship.
He's got those big male pants, right? So like, how do we know what's underneath? It could all just be panic.
I mean, Melbourne had – no, I'll post the picture, but Melbourne has to create these MC Hammer-like pants because, I mean, it's too sexual at this point if you just have his legs sticking out the way that they are. Like, this guy is built like no other. So I've been trying to get Melbourne to sponsor any show I'm doing. I'd love for them to sponsor this show. I'll rock the MC Hammer pants. I'll wear the wild – vest that he has. Like, I'll put on anything. I don't really care if they want to sponsor this show. But I will say this about Jason Day, if nothing else, he's unique and different. And for enough money, maybe it's the same answer that I'm giving, that he'll put on things that are unique and different. And I don't know how much say he actually has on what he's wearing, but it's nice to see somebody that doesn't look like everybody else out there. It's a different attire. He's unique and different in that regard. And I'm never going to nail Jason Day in general, but I'm not going to nail him for sticking out and being a unique commodity on the tour.
We know, well, actually, I will say it this way. I actually assumed you would nail Jason Day, but we meant it.
I knew that joke was coming after I said it. I could have bet so much money on that, Joel.
Oh, that's a wrap. I had fun tonight. Guys, follow along. Let us know who you think is going to win. We are going to talk smack next week and crown a champion. Good luck. See you next week. Oh, and what did I forget?
Sports.
Sports. Thanks.